The feed. Thank you. We're good, Judge Mormon.
All right, so welcome everybody to our Wednesday afternoon Judicial Branch Budget Committee meeting. And just a few reminders, the meeting's open to the public and it is being recorded. The meeting is being conducted virtually. Members of the public can watch the meeting via a listen-only video feed. Budget Committee members and others who may be presenting or answering questions, please remember to unmute yourself prior to speaking and please mute yourself when you're not speaking to minimize the background noise. Also, please identify yourself before speaking, and that's for the viability of the recording. So, with those opening remarks, we have basically two matters to deal with today. One of them is our minutes from November 16th. If there's been sufficient review, I would accept a motion.
Move to approve, Hop.
Thank you.
Yamasaki seconds.
All right, Judge Hopp moves and Mr. Yamasaki seconds. Is there any further discussion regarding the minutes? Seeing no hands or comments, all in favor of approving the minutes from November 16th, 2022, please say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? I will abstain since I joined in about the last 60 seconds of the meeting. All right,
Judge
so
Mormon?
yes.
Sorry to interrupt. Do you want me to take roll for the online video feed portion?
Sure.
Okay. Justice
Thank you.
Rubin or Judge Rubin.
He
Sorry.
will not be joining us today.
Okay. Judge Mormon?
Present.
Justice Fujisaki?
Here.
Justice Hill?
Here.
Judge Armendariz?
Here.
Judge Botke?
Here.
Judge Hopp?
Here.
Mr. Yamasaki?
Yes, President.
Thank you. And Ms. Hill?
And she's present.
Okay, thank you. So we've got seven of, or eight of the nine members present. So we have a quorum.
Great. Helps because we already approved the minutes. Thank you. All right, so did we receive any public comment for this meeting?
There's no public comment.
All right, having received no public comment, that will conclude the public comment portion of the meeting. So we have one item on our agenda for discussion today, and it is the Firearm Relinquishment Grant Program. The materials are at pages 7 through 12 of the materials you did receive. And I think we have Mr. Tanaka. I thought I saw him.
Hi, yes, I'm here.
Oh, Mr. Tanaka, how are you? Good. And Ms. Ho, I also saw her.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, there we are. Okay, there's so many squares. Thank you. I'm always looking for all the right squares. Sorry about that. Okay, well, Mr. Tanaka, Ms. Ho, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Judge Mormon. Good morning, committee members. I'll first start by introducing myself. My name is Greg Tanaka. I'm a supervising attorney at the Center for Families, Children, and the Courts, and I oversee our programs related to domestic violence, family law, and staff support to the Advisory Committee on Providing Access and Fairness. Thank you for having us today to present to you the recommended grant allocations for the Firearm Relinquishment Grant Program on behalf of the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee. I'll now let my colleague introduce herself as well and to start our presentation.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having us. My name is Frances Ho. I'm also an attorney with the Judicial Council. I work on domestic violence policy and education. And Greg and I are here today to present to you recommendations from the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee to award seven courts with a total of approximately $18 million in one-time funding for firearm relinquishment. Can everybody see that I'm sharing a PowerPoint?
I think we can.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Sorry, I can't see your faces when I'm sharing. And apologies to Mr. Yamasaki and staff who've already heard this presentation in the last week. But if we miss anything that we presented a tick back, please let us know. So we're just going to spend about 10 minutes to provide you with an overview of the funding and eligibility requirements, the grant application and review process, and to just give you a highlight of the application that we received to essentially supplement you with some information in addition to the draft Judicial Council report that you received in your materials. Sorry about that. So the enabling legislation for the money is Assembly Bill 178. And it really provides a unique opportunity in that it establishes a court-based firearm enforcement or relinquishment program, which is not what we typically think of when we think of enforcing court orders. The funding is there to ensure that firearms are consistently and safely removed from individuals who've become prohibited from having them pursuant to a court order. And I find it really helpful to think of AB 178 as complementing Senate Bill 320, which some of you might be familiar with. It passed and went into effect the beginning of this year in 2022, and it really enhanced the court's role in ensuring that firearms are properly relinquished in domestic violence and juvenile restraining order matters. And there are a number of requirements that the courts have to meet now, including notifying law enforcement and prosecuting agencies when there has been a finding of noncompliance with the firearm orders. So that this is just one of the ways in which AB 178 funding can be used, right, to help implement SB 320. But courts can also use the funding to address compliance in other civil cases, like other civil restraining orders, like gun violence, elder abuse, civil harassment, for example, as well as compliance in criminal cases. However, the legislature did specifically require that priority be given to programs that focus on civil cases, which all of our applicants for this round did. So we were allocated $40 million in one-time funding. We were given the money the beginning of July to start this new program. So we got the money out, or at least the application process started the program as quickly as we could. We invited all courts to apply in September, and they were given about a month to put together an application if their county was interested. Most of the money goes directly to the courts and their law enforcement partners. So at least $36 million of that $40 million, up to 10% or $4 million can be used by the council to administer the program, to staff it, as well as to evaluate the program. And that's actually a mandatory requirement of AB 178 that we contract with a research center like the UC Davis Firearm Violence Research Center to see if the programs are effective. And now I'm going to hand it over to Greg, who's going to go over grant eligibility and other considerations.
Thanks, Frances. All Superior Courts, as Frances mentioned, were eligible to apply to support new or expanded firearm relinquishment efforts and activities at the local level. They had to have at least one law enforcement agency partner with at least 30% of the total proposed budget allocations dedicated to the law enforcement agency partner or partners. The law enforcement agency activities were defined under the Budget Act as those that could not reasonably and safely be conducted by the court. As part of the Budget Act, the courts and law enforcement agency partners also had to agree to participate in any data collection, as Frances also mentioned, required by the Judicial Council or a research entity the council contracts with to evaluate the programs. Next slide, please, Frances. At a minimum, priorities for selecting the grants were laid out under AB 178, which included prioritizing firearm relinquishment activities related to domestic violence restraining orders, gun violence restraining orders, or any other civil court orders. Also, the bill prioritized higher numbers or high numbers of DVROs or domestic violence restraining orders or gun violence restraining order requests being filed per capita for an applicant county. Also, a priority in the bill included ensuring diversity in geographic areas of the state and as well as court size. all 8 applicant courts that submitted a proposal met the priorities of the grant and also represented a fairly diverse pool geographically and for the size of the court based on the number of courts that applied. So about, two were from small counties initially, from the northern counties of the state. 2 were from medium-sized counties and the central coast or Bay Area. And 4 were large counties from Southern California or the Bay Area. An additional grant requirement that the funds could not supplant existing firearm relinquishment programs already in place or activities that were not directly related to firearm relinquishment was also part of the criteria that we included for the grant application. Next slide, please. So shortly after the funding was provided to the council, as Francis mentioned, we had a very tight timeline to try to get the funds out to the courts as soon as possible. It was decided that the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee would have purview over the process and the grant selection process and application process. A review group was quickly established that comprised of 7 members. 5 members were from the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee, and we also sought the expertise of other committees and invited 1 member from the Criminal Law Advisory Committee, as well as 1 member from the Civil and Small Claims Advisory Committee. The group was comprised of judicial officers, a court administrator, a self-help center manager, and 2 domestic violence advocates. It was a very well-rounded group that got a lot done in a very short amount of time. The group came up with the proposed recommendations that went to the full Family and Juvenile Advisory Committee for their consideration and approval. The draft Judicial Council report that you were provided in your materials reflects the recommendations as proposed by the review group and that were unanimously approved by the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee on November 14th. In addition, TICBAC reviewed and approved the report and allocations on November 29th of last week. And at this time, I'd like to invite Mr. Yamasaki, as a member of TICBAC as well, to provide any additional thoughts or insight from the TICBAC meeting.
Yes, thank you very much for the opportunity. And thank you very much, Ms. Ho and Mr. Tanaka. As always, JCC reports are extremely detailed and for the most part, very self-explanatory. And again, it was great hearing the presentation again, just to reemphasize some of the work that went behind it. So great work there. I was going to only add a couple of points. Even though there was, $36 million that was made available for this particular program, 7 courts basically were able to qualify and receive funding for the 2-year duration for the grant program to proceed, which raised some questions as to why perhaps other courts did not submit applications and subsequently get approval for that. And part of that, as is reflected in the materials, there requires a very close collaboration and cooperation between a local court and a local law enforcement agency. And this is, while we may be familiar with some of the aspects of firearms relinquishment, the requirements do take work. And I don't think that the absence of more applicants is a reflection that they're unwilling or don't believe in the program. I think at this point in time, what we learned was it is a bit of a burden that some of the agencies and some of the courts may struggle to try to comply with the requirements, and maybe taking a look at the success of the programs that will be in place should the council approve the allocation, more information will be available such that other courts will be very eager to participate as well. The other aspect of this is that as you see from the materials that the monetary allocations may not have consistency to some degree based on the size of the court. But what was clarified during the meeting that we received is that the applications had to include detailed information of what sort of things would be allowed. And in some jurisdictions, some of those expenses are a little more. Some of the courts are also going to be standing up programs from scratch, so there's going to be some upfront costs as well. So in that regard, there may not be tremendous consistency like a formula that would be used to drive the allocation. But all of the courts that participated in the program had to provide very detailed information, and it was very clear that all of those expenses were very sufficient enough for everybody to understand the variance that may exist in how much each court received. And with that, I think the information was helpful, and the Budget Advisory Committee approved this recommendation, or these recommendations, to move forward for this body's consideration. And I can answer any other questions if there are any. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Are we going to talk more about other details about this, or should I ask a question now? I don't want to cut off whatever other part of this report might be coming.
We do have.
We're happy to answer any questions at any time.
Okay. So I was wanted a little bit of clarification. So there's two parts to this recommendation. One is to approve the allocation and distribution of the 18.5, which I understand all of that, I think, and then to delegate to the FAMJU to reallocate and distribute. So there's 18.5 that we're distributing. Is that just one chunk of 18.5 for both of those years, or is that 18.5 for each of the 2 years?
For the entire program. So the entire program length, which is about, I believe, 29 months.
Right. Okay. So that leaves 17.5. And so I was just wondering what happens to that. And are we voting on what happens to that today? I couldn't quite tell.
Sure. Justice Fujisaki, I think what we recognized was the $18 million, roughly $18.5 million, was going to be awarded to the in the first round. And this is an excellent description of what was anticipated. That the action of this body would be to approve the recommended allocation for those participating courts. The second round would be available, the $17 million roughly that you've mentioned, would be available for the subsequent submissions that are made for participants to receive that money and maintain the program. And I think one element that is included is if the participating courts in the first round end up having a surplus, that money would then be reconsidered for distribution to courts that may have found their allocation to be a little bit short. So that's a possibility. And if they find that, you know, hey, that amount of the allocation was just not enough for us to support the program, I think they too can submit a modification such that it could be considered for an increase in the allocation. So the total amount, I think it's $36 million for the program itself. Seven of the courts have been approved or are being considered for approval for a total of 18, and then the remaining balance would be available for subsequent submissions by courts who are able to participate as well.
Okay, so the 18.5, it will cover the 2 year period. It's not okay.
For the first participating courts. And then the next round would include subsequent submissions.
Right. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So you'll get to see us again in the spring.
So the follow-up, I think our charge today is to recommend to the council for its meeting in January 20th and 21st, correct?
Correct.
That's my understanding. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So other questions or comments?
I I did have one comment. I just wanted to highlight my understanding that to ensure the impartial posture of the courts, that notwithstanding the fact that some of this money would be going to fund a dedicated DA investigator, that the activities of that investigator are limited to enforcement activities, and it prohibits the use of funds for prosecution activities.
Yes, and that issue was raised with the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee, and they agree that there was a line that if the investigator is essentially performing all the duties that a law enforcement officer would in trying to get the guns, investigating whether a person has firearms in violation of order, or executing warrants, then that would be within the goal of AB 178. But activities related to building a criminal case for a violation of a court order, for example, would not be covered under the grant.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there comments or questions from anybody? And I can barely see all of you. So speak up. Oh, there we are. Okay. All right, I don't see any hands or anybody wanting to say anything. So we would need a motion to approve the recommendation either as presented or in some modified form for addition to the council's agenda in January.
Fujisaki, so moved.
Judge Morgan Yamasaki seconds.
All right, Justice Fujisaki moved, Mr. Yamasaki seconds. And the motion is to adopt the recommendation as presented for round one. Recommend the proposal for round one to the council. All right, any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? And I'll add my own aye. All right, the motion carries. Thank you very, very much. And thank you, Ms. Ho, Mr. Tanaka, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Yamasaki, thanks for jumping in. Appreciate that very much.
Absolutely.
All right, well, our next open meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, January 18th, 2023, which will be here in just a flash. Any further business for today? If not, I see
just
no hands.
Wish everyone happy holidays.
Yes, all around.
Thank you to all of you as well. Thank you.
All right. And we do appreciate everybody making time today for this important issue in advance of the council's meeting in January. Have a lovely day. We'll stand in adjournment. Thank you.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Holidays. Bye.